Tucked up the back of the La Trobe University Bundoora campus lies the Melbourne Wildlife Sanctuary, formerly the grounds of a mental institution which was formerly part of the territory of the Aboriginal Wurundjeri tribe. It is now called home by a multitude of native animals, including kangaroos, possums, a small army of frogs, an impressive assortment of vegetation, some overly friendly ants, and a ranger named Andrew Stocker. Coming up to the entrance now of the wildlife sanctuary. Now I'm locked out. Hello.
Doing some last minute repairs on my new toy. I'll put this away.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, they delivered it today, so my mum
hasn't even got any dust on it yet.
No, exactly.
Is that for here?
Yeah, I'm. If we ever had the money, I would. Ah, that's much better. I would actually try and encourage.
Encourage?
You need to buy like a fleet of these.
And helmets, of course.
And helmets, exactly.
Electric bikes aside, Andrew is clearly someone who loves his work.
I've been working at the Wildlife Sanctuary for, officially, 3 years. But I've actually been involved with the place for about 5 years. I started out as a volunteer at the end of my degree. I needed to get 500 hours of volunteer experience, or some sort of experience in this sort of industry, to get my degree. So I started volunteering here. The more and more time I spent out here, I picked up the odd casual shift doing night tours and working with kids and all that sort of stuff.
Our wildlife tour began at what finally passed for sunset for a summer in Melbourne, sometime around 9 p.m.
This is pretty much a perfect night, as you sort of said. You can hear all the frogs.
Yeah, I know, I heard them coming
up. Fantastic, yeah, yeah. So out there I can hear spotted marsh frogs.
Yep.
And common eastern froglets. So the spotted marsh frogs are the ones that are sort of going. I can't really do it that well, but
it's a bit irregular.
Yeah, yeah. And then the common eastern froglets are the ones that are just going rant, 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 rant.
Yeah,
rant,
yeah.
Rant, just constantly like that.
Yeah, no, I can pick them both out.
Yeah. If you get the actual pitch right, like I'm sort of sitting here going. If you get the right pitch for the particular frog that's out there, like individual animal,
yeah,
they'll actually call back.
Okay, and you'll be followed by a randy frog.
That's precisely right.
Little did I know how right I was. As the night progressed, we came across a frog called the Pobblebonk, which had a very distinctive call.
I used the word bonk.
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 See?
He's answering
calling back. As long as you get the pitch right, you'll have them going crazy all night.
There you go, the frog whisperer.
Yeah. So the area that we're actually standing in at the moment is what we call the Bruce Smith grassland. Bruce Smith was probably the most recent what we call assistant ranger. And he is incredibly passionate about grasslands. So everything out here is sort of representative of the grassland species that would have occurred in Melbourne before European settlement. At this point in time, you can't necessarily see them all. I mean, things like on the ground here, well, we've got some native grasses there.
Yeah.
But there's also things like chocolate lilies that come up at certain times of the year. During springtime, you can walk out into this area and you'll just see different coloured wildflowers. And that's what John Batman wrote about when he first sort of settled Melbourne. In his diaries, he sort of spoke about the fantastic sort of display of different coloured wildflowers. And that's what we've tried to replicate in this area.
And are many of the grasses and the trees here, were they already naturally occurring here, or did you have to introduce some species?
everything that you see in the wildlife sanctuary has actually been put in here by people.
Yeah.
It's a totally man-made environment, except for some of the major dominant tree species that we see, that we'll see tonight.
Yeah.
There's like any tree bigger than about 3 foot in diameter would have been here originally, because we're talking older than about 200 years.
Yeah, okay.
Anything else has actually been put in here by people. In the last 40 years.
The last 40 years.
Yep. Foxes, cats, dogs, rabbits, you know, you name it. This area was sort of occupied by all of those. And over the last 40 years, I guess that's what we've made, you know, that's been our major focus, is getting rid of all these pest species and then putting in all the species that should be here.
So everything that's in here now would have been here if this was a naturally occurring environment about, what, 60 years ago?
Yeah, yep. So, you know, something like this tree here, which isn't the best specimen, but it's a golden wattle, Acacia pygnantha. It's Victoria's... It's definitely Australia's floral emblem, not Victoria's.
It's Australia's floral emblem.
So when we go overseas and compete in Olympic Games and Commonwealth Games and all that sort of stuff, we wear two colours, green and gold. That actually comes from the green for leaves of the golden wattle, and gold for the flowers that sort of come out in August.
And how many animal species do you have here?
Animal species, if you're talking on ground, say mammals, there's probably about five or six.
Yeah.
Things like eastern grey kangaroos, echidnas, possums, ring-tailed possums, brush-tailed possums, sugar gliders. So there's a range of animals that we've got.
And what's this? No, it's just a bit of wood.
Yeah. The nightlight plays tricks on you. So yeah, we've just walked past the what we call the small lake, and now we're walking past the main lake of the Melbourne Wildlife Sanctuary. And these lakes were created back in the 70s as part of a natural stormwater filtration process, I guess. And retardation process. It's the first time that we know of in Australia, if not the world, where people have actually deliberately constructed wetlands to help. And you can hear that sort of water flowing through underneath our feet as we cross the bridge and look out over the main lake. And all of this water is a result of the surrounding suburbs. So someone had a bit of foresight in the sense that we made these sort of massive wetlands in order to slow the water flow when we had a rain event as it moves into the campus, because this flows directly into the moat.
Yeah.
If we didn't have this huge body of water, we'd just have mass amounts of water flowing straight into the university moat system. And what this also does is it actually helps us, or helps the water's filtration process. Being a big expanse of water exposed to UV rays and that sort of stuff helps break down all sorts of things in the water and makes it nice and healthy. And there's other parts of the process that we'll see as we walk around the sanctuary. And it's kind of fantastic.
The wildlife sanctuary has a number of purposes. The first is to be the home and a safe habitat for native animals.
So I've been noticing boxes around the trees. Are they nesting boxes?
Certainly are there.
Well,
that's
a low branch.
Yep. Watch your head.
Not too low. Might be a bit low for you.
Yes. The dominant tree species in this region is called a river redgum, which is Eucalyptus camaldulensis. And that actually takes about 150 years to develop hollows. And a mature red gum, one that's sort of about 600 or 700 years old, they live to about 1,000 years old. A mature red gum will actually have anywhere between about 20 and 30 of these hollows in it. So, you know, in a hectare or in an acre where you'd have sort of, let's say a hectare where you'd have sort of 6 or 7 dominant red gums, you're looking at a lot of hollows that were required to support the right balance of animals that existed in this sort of environment.
So if I could join the dots, because these trees are a bit young, they haven't had time to develop that, and you're helping them along by putting boxes in.
Spot on.
Yeah?
That's exactly what we're doing. So we call this the substitute habitat, or the commission-style housing, the five-star accommodation. the five-star accommodation is obviously the natural hollow in the tree.
There you go, they prefer nature to your boxes, do they?
Definitely.
And do different animals inhabit different boxes? Do they have their own requirements?
Certainly. A sugar glider likes a certain volume of box so that it can nest and have young and that sort of stuff, whereas a brush tail and a ring tail will have a slightly bigger box. Ducks have boxes. Owls have boxes. Antechinus, a little tiny marsupial mouse, has a hollow requirements. Fascagales. We've got probably about 15 different types of boxes out there. And nowadays, we're actually starting to distribute them all around Australia as substitute habitat. So it's a great thing that we've sort of started about 20 years ago just to supply the sanctuary with some hollows.
The second is to be used for education, probably not surprising given its surroundings. Scattered around the sanctuary were a number of features that, while initially seemed out of place, served to bring you closer to nature.
Around on this side, we've got our...
You've got an above ground swimming pool.
We have an above ground swimming pool, exactly.
Okay.
And this is fantastic for kids getting right up close to a wetland to see what sort of animals live in a wetland. Here we've got you just went down underneath. That's some sort of water spider that jumped down under there. What other things can we spot in there? Well, obviously a lot of aquatic vegetation.
Yeah, quite a lot. This looks like my pool back home.
There's a spider crawling up into my lens. Oh, look at that.
Oh, nice.
How cool is that web? It's interesting though, most spiders will actually spin two different types of web. The ones that sort of, you know, provide the structural support will actually be quite strong and quite strong and you can touch them sort of like that. Whereas this, the stuff in the middle that joins it is actually very, very sticky.
Yeah.
Which is the bit that catches the insect. It's fantastic. This is the sort of stuff you don't see during the day. Just a web that, you know, I mean, that web will probably get destroyed during the day sometime and it'll come out and rebuild the whole thing.
So how did it get across from...
Yeah, I don't know. They're amazing.
It's a tiny spider and yep. It's got, what, about a good metre and a half of web away from its support. That must have been one hell of a jump. And it had to do that a fair few... Oh, well, it probably did it once and then ran out along that web strand. But still...
Yep, they're pretty clever.
Later on in the evening, the nocturnal animals slowly begin to emerge.
Now I'm almost sure that I need to head this way. Am I instilling confidence?
Yeah, it was the almost that did it.
Yeah, you follow me over this way.
Yeah.
I think it might actually be a brush tail with a baby on its back. I thought it was ringtails initially.
Where?
Straight up the top of the tree. Yeah, brush-tail possums.
Brush-tail possums.
Yeah.
How did you see that?
Glowing eyes.
Oh, really?
Yep.
See, I can't even see that. They're not looking at us, though.
No. Well, if you grab that, you should be able to, if you hold it in line of sight.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely brush-tailed possums, and there's two of them, which kind of makes me think that there's a baby sort of sitting on the back of the mother, because that's often how they sort of transport themselves around.
Just four eyes looking at us going, why are you shining the light on us?
Yeah.
It does look like one of them is a lot smaller.
Yes, yeah. And that's actually quite unique. It's very rare that, you know, when we do a night tour that we'll actually see two brush tails in the same spot. Because normally they're very territorial.
Yeah.
So you'll only find sort of one every so often sort of thing. So two in the one spot is, to me, indicates, you know, a mother and child. If we wander this way. We're kind of on a track.
So that possum have used a box?
There's a couple of reasonable size red gums in this area. I think that it would have used boxes, because in this area here we do have a reasonable supply of boxes.
Do you track how many possums you've got here, like the brush tail? Do you know how many are in
at
the...
At this stage we don't. However...
You've got no way to bag and tag them? That'll be a lot of work.
No, well see, this is the thing that I think that what we're, I guess, looking forward to is the fact that this year the zoology department started as part of their course a requirement that students get some sort of experience in the field.
Yeah.
And so we've had a lot of students come out to the wildlife sanctuary wanting to do stuff, and so we've started a nesting box monitoring program, and we've started a pest species monitoring program, and these are things that students are helping us with, coming up with methodologies and, you know, doing all that sort of stuff, so that in the long term, in say 4 or 5 years time, we'll have a clear indication of what we've got, and we'll have what we call baseline data that we can actually start using to lead into sort of, you know, honours and PhD projects.
By this time it is well and truly dark. It was hot, it was dusty, and while I blustered along with the discretion of a monster truck, Andrew seemed to be right in his element. It was probably at around this point that I realised that the spare batteries in my pocket, for reasons I can't really fathom, had decided to melt. The horror slowly dawned on me that I was faced with a dilemma. I could hardly throw them away into the bush and leave them behind, but on the flip side, I wanted to have children one day. I decided, perhaps unwisely, to keep them in my pocket and to worry about the consequences another day.
This is a nice big red gum. Two of them. At least sort of 300 years old. And you can see down in the front of this one, there's a scar.
Yeah.
Carved out of the tree. Now, there's three trees in the wildlife sanctuary that we know that have scars in them. This one's one of them. One of them we know is definitely an Aboriginal scar tree.
Okay.
But the other two we're not 100% sure. But one day we'll get our Wurundjeri elders in here to have a bit of a look and figure out if they are. In which case they'll then go onto the heritage registry of trees that, well, regardless of whether it's got a scar on it or not, it shouldn't really be touched.
And I just walked through a web. Hope that spider didn't spend too long on that.
There's definitely something on the ground over there. Oh, lots of them.
Lots of what? What are you seeing that I'm not?
I'm seeing the bright, shiny eyes of wolf spiders.
Oh, great. Yeah? Where am I?
Most of them are tucked away now. But there was heaps of them over there. There's one. If you hold the torch.
Right.
And try and get the light in your line of sight.
Yes.
You'll see.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, see? You'll see glowing eyes.
Little orange.
Yeah. Yep. And you can see they're miles away.
Yeah, he's just hanging around. He's not scared of me.
Yep.
Now, not that I want to get too close, but how big is a wolf spider?
Oh, probably, they vary, but 20-cent coin, 50-cent coin, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Here I was being worried.
In fact, a lot of them have like a little trapdoor mechanism that as you approach, you'll actually see them just suddenly...
Oh, look, there's another one.
...pull their trapdoor closed.
Can you see the other one? There's like... Well, yeah, there's definitely two there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's glowing orange. Okay, so we're not going over there.
One thing that surprised me is that we'd gone from seeing no animals in the park to finding them all around us. While I couldn't always see them, I could definitely hear them, and they were more than aware of us.
I wonder if the frogs are talking to my shoes. Can you hear my shoes?
I did. I heard them and I was going to say, now that's the characteristic sound of a... Oh, did you hear that one right there?
Yeah, I did. And that wasn't my shoe that time.
No.
Wait, maybe it...
Whoa.
Where is he? We should be able to see him.
He's just in under here somewhere. But he's a crazy sounding pobble bomb. He sort of made a weird noise.
He is, he's answering my shoes.
He so is.
Yeah. There you go.
Now you're the frog whisperer.
He's very close.
Yeah. Maybe he likes the torch on.
He yes, does, he likes the light. There you go. He likes the spotlight. So what sort of frog's that?
That is a spotted marsh frog.
Spotted marsh frog.
Yep. Tock. Sounds like a couple of river rocks being banged together.
And is it spotted?
Yes, definitely. Prominent spots all over its body. That's the kangaroo. Or a kangaroo.
Oh, yep, can see him. In the distance there, yeah.
Yeah, on the other side of the wetland. Only one. Oh, another one.
Oh, let's skip.
There's two up there.
So what sort of kangaroos are they?
So they're eastern grey kangaroos. I kind of think the cool thing about eastern grey kangaroos is that they actually regulate their population reasonably well. The females will actually pretty much stop their reproductive system when conditions are bad. So when you've got a prolonged drought or something like that, they'll actually stop their reproductive system, and you'll end up with not a large population of kangaroos. The problem that we encounter is that longer term in our sort of farming environments, agricultural environments, when the rain comes, the farmers jump out and grow, sow all their crops.
Yeah.
Because that's what they should do.
Yes.
Because they need to grow crops. But then when they grow crops, kangaroos go, aha, more food. And so they produce more babies. And so it's that sort of, catch 22 situation.
Yeah.
Where we end up with massive populations of kangaroos in farming and sort of rural environments.
What's that?
I don't really know.
Okay.
It's a bird.
Rightio.
I know that.
There's something rather unnerving about seeing a kangaroo at night in its own territory. I think they'd finally figured out that there was no point in hiding. The amount of noise I was making tripping over branches, they could clearly tell I wasn't a danger to them.
There's a roo just in here.
A roo?
Yep. Look at that.
Oh, hello.
Having a munch. Or a scratch, actually. So that's another eastern grey.
How old would that be?
Probably about 2 or 3 years old. Oh, another one over the back there. I told you they sort of like to hang out together.
Where? Oh, yeah, there's a smaller one.
Yep. And in fact, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, most of the females had joeys. So I'd be surprised if we don't find one with a joey in it.
Really are beautiful animals.
They don't seem to mind us too much.
And why the car?
Well, that car was dumped here. It's a 1968 Holden Belmont.
Yep.
We actually call it Betsy's Mobile.
And it was at this point that my batteries ran out. Suffice to say, the Betsy's Mobile was well and truly in the process of being reclaimed by nature, and it was clear that more than one kangaroo called its deteriorating back seat home. On our way out of the sanctuary, we not only saw, but heard, a sugar glider, which Andrew assured me was a rare occurrence. In retrospect, I'm fairly certain that it was telling us to go away and to turn the damn light off. Probably most of the animals in the wildlife sanctuary were assisting it at this point. For more information about the Melbourne Wildlife Sanctuary, or to book yourself on one of its night tours, visit the website at www.latrobe.edu.au/wildlife.
By saying see where this leads us, you do know where it goes, don't you?
Certainly.
Okay, good. Because I'm following you, I don't think that needs to be said, but you know.